Welcome to WKAR Scoring Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Hey, it is May 23rd, 2017. Apologies for the technical difficulties out there. It is Tuesday, folks, and we have a loaded show in store for all of you out there. So, in today's current sports, I don't know if you guys saw this news, but it is just broken around 12:30 to be exact. A Title IX investigation has determined that three Michigan State football players who were accused of sexually assaulting a fellow student were found to have violated university policy. That is according to an attorney who represents the alleged victim. Now, Lansing attorney Karen Truzowski confirmed to the Detroit Free Press that the case against the three unnamed football players is progressing through MSU's student conduct system. She declined to give further details about the case. Again, this is according to Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press. The criminal case has been under review by Ingham County Prosecutor Carol Seaman since March 14th. There is no timetable for when or if charges will be filed. MSU police are seeking four warrants. So again, folks, breaking news here. We have speculated for quite some time. It has actually been 104 days since February 9th. That is the date where news came out that there was going to be an investigation involving three unnamed MSU football players and a unnamed staff member were all suspended. And now, again, according to the attorney who represents the alleged victim, the Title IX investigation has determined that three MSU football players were accused of sexually assaulting that fellow student have violated university policy. We are taking your calls. Of course, you will hear my comments, further comments on this breaking news in just a moment. We want to hear from you. What is your immediate reaction after waiting all of this time and finally hearing developments on this case? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also weigh in via social media at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR underscore sports. I'll elaborate on that further. So without further ado, that leads our current sports headliners, quick hit headliners. I want to give you the rest. Can we cue some music here, Jacob? All right, keeping this thing pushing. Again, we will get to the breaking news concerning the Michigan State football team in just a moment. But in other news, a judge on Monday sentenced former Western Michigan University football player, 19-year-old Ronald George of Pittsburgh, to 32 months to 10 years. George's co-defendant, 19-year-old Bryson White of Mason, Ohio, faces a July 3rd sentencing after pleading guilty earlier this month to armed robbery. White and George were accused in the robbery last August after planning to smoke marijuana with a woman. Cash, marijuana, and a speaker were taken from her in her own apartment. The two were dismissed from the team following their arrest. The Chicago Sky surprised their fans and the WNBA by cutting former Michigan State and Freeland High School star Torrey Jankowska one game into the regular season. Wow, talk about jarring, right? Chicago took Torrey with the 9th overall pick in the draft, expecting her to fill a role as a three-point shooter and combo guard. But after training camp and their season opener, the Sky waived both Jankowska and former Ohio State forward Shayla Cooper, who was the 13th overall pick in the draft. Sounds like a waste of draft picks, right? Neither played in the team's season opener. They were waived to make room on the roster for two of Chicago's international players, Allie Quigley and Courtney Vandersloot, who competed in the Turkish League playoffs. Now, Jankowska set Michigan State's single-game season and career scoring records during her four seasons with the Spartans. So we don't know what that next step will be for Torrey. Again, she wants to play in the WNBA, I'm sure. We'll see if she can land a roster spot or if that ship has sailed, if it's a bit too late. If not, I can see Torrey certainly playing overseas. We'll see, and we'll talk about that later on in the show as well. All right, the Michigan State women's golf season has unfortunately come to an end. The MSU women's golf team season came to a close on Monday in the third round of the NCAA championships in Sugar Grove, Illinois. The Spartans had their best round of the tourney on Monday, shooting a 16 over par 304 at Rich Harvest Farms. Now, MSU finished the national championships 74 over par, a 938, and in 19th place in the 24-team field. Junior Sarah Burnham recorded the lowest score of the tournament by a Spartan with a 1 over par 73 on Monday. No senior is on the MSU women's golf roster, so you know what that means, right? The entire team will be back at it next year. But congratulations to head coach Stacy Slobotnik-Stoll and her team on a great season, one that did include a Big Ten championship. Alex Troop was named the Big Ten Conference Baseball Pitcher of the Week for last week's performance. That was announced yesterday by the conference office. Troop pitched 8 innings in leading Michigan State to a 6-1 win over number 15 Michigan on May 18th at McLane Stadium. The sophomore lefty, he took a perfect game into the 6th and a no-hitter into the 7th, chalking up 10 strikeouts while only allowing 2 hits, tying his career highs for both Ks and hits allowed in pitching 8 innings. Troop held high-powered U of M to its fewest hits of the season and its second lowest run total. A native of Batavia, Illinois, Troop collects his first career Big Ten Pitcher of the Week accolade and also MSU's first Big Ten Pitcher of the Week award since former teammate Dakota Meeks did so in March of last year. The Eden Rapids Greyhounds softball team topped the previously unbeaten Grand Ledge Comets yesterday evening at Rainey Park, 4-0 the final. Greyhound freshie Grace Lato. How good is Grace, right? And she's only a freshman. She threw a no-hitter in the semifinal against Weberville to get Eden Rapids to the Big Dance. She threw a 2-hit shutout yesterday to seal the deal for ER. This is the 6th softball classic championship in 9 years for the Greyhounds and first in 3 years. We will have coverage from last night's big win for the Greyhounds later on this hour. You don't want to miss that. It was also day one of the Dean Shippey Capital Area Diamond Classic at Kircher Municipal Park yesterday. St. John's top Fowler 5-4 to advance to play Holt in the second round this Thursday. Oakham is top Portland St. Patrick 4-0. The Chiefs will move on now to play DeWitt in the second round this Thursday. Today at Cooley Law School Stadium, you can catch Portland versus Grand Ledge at 5 p.m. and Fowler versus Lakewood at 7. Four Houston Astros pitchers, led by 4 1/3 innings from starter Brad Peacock. He combined to throw Houston's first one-hitter in nearly 4 years and made Jose Altuve's first inning RBI double stand up for a 1-0 win over the Detroit Tigers, snapping a 3-game losing streak and becoming the first team in the majors to reach 30 wins. How about the Astros, right? Tigers starter Michael Fulmer was the tough luck losing pitcher, allowing 1 run on 8 hits in 7 innings. He had won his previous 3 starts, pitching at least 7 innings each time. He has 9 consecutive quality starts to open the season. Jay-Z hits the mound tonight. Jordan Zimmerman, who struck out 6 Orioles in 6 innings in his last start, will try to build on that with a matchup against the young, aggressive, swinging Astros. 8:10 p.m. first pitch. He has a scoreless streak of 15 1/3 consecutive innings against the Astros, but he has not faced them since April 30th of 2014 while with the Nationals. In the NBA playoffs, last night Steph Curry scores 36. Kevin Durant adds a double-double, and the Warriors officially sweep the San Antonio Spurs. How about Golden State, huh? Claiming its 3rd straight Western Conference championship and becoming the first team in the playoffs to enter the finals with a perfect 12-0 playoff record. The Warriors now await the winner of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics. The Cavs looking to improve on a 2-1 series lead tonight in Cleveland at 8:30 p.m. In the NHL playoffs, the Nashville Predators booked a ticket to the Stanley Cup Finals with a 6-3 win over the Anaheim Ducks in the Western Conference Finals in six games. All right, this is the first trip to the Stanley Cup Finals in program history for Nashville. The Ottawa Senators play the Pittsburgh Penguins at 8 p.m. on NBCSN, NBC Sports Network, and CBC in Game 6 for the Eastern Conference Finals. The Penguins have a 3-2 series lead. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. A ton to get to on today's show. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call if you want to be a part of today's show. Let's start today's show. Here we go. Oh, boy, and that is how we start this afternoon's current sports. One of my favorite movie franchises. How can you not love James Bond, right? How can you not? I have, like, all of the movies on DVD back at my apartment. The reason why I'm starting current sports that way today is because, if you haven't heard, some unfortunate news came across the news wire this morning, actually. But actor Sir Roger Moore, best known for playing James Bond, has sadly passed away at the age of 89, his family announced. Of course, Roger Moore famously played the spy in seven Bond films, including Live and Let Die, I love that one, and A View to a Kill. Sir Roger's family confirmed the news via Twitter. Unfortunate stuff there. Roger Moore, certainly one of my favorite actors that have played Bond in the past. Probably my favorite. I grew up on Pierce Brosnan, but I must say Daniel Craig is really, really good. Really, really good. So I wanted to pass that unfortunate news along to you all. We've got a loaded hour of sports talk in store for the next hour, all the way up until 2 p.m. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. And I want to start with the story that is currently dominating sports headlines here locally. Breaking news. This is according to Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press. A Title IX investigation determined three Michigan State football players who were accused of sexually assaulting a fellow student were found to have violated university policy. That is according to an attorney who represents the alleged victim. Again, it is found in this Title IX investigation that the three unnamed Michigan State University football players who are accused of sexually assaulting a fellow student have violated university policy. So something they did was clearly wrong here. Our first evidence of that, I guess you can say. Lansing attorney Karen Truszewski confirmed to the Free Press that the case against the three unnamed players is progressing through MSU's student conduct system. She declined to give further details to the Free Press about the case, saying, quote, They have not been expelled or dismissed from the school at this point because it has not gotten to that stage yet. Now, what does this mean moving forward when it comes to the two other investigations that are still underway concerning this investigation? And it's been such a long time, hasn't it? Such a long time. And if you are Mark D'Antonio, head coach of the Michigan State football program and his coaching staff, or the other players who aren't involved in this investigation, the waiting game certainly has to be frustrating. It's been 104 days since February 9th, since news came out that three, again, unnamed football players for Michigan State and an unnamed football staff member were under this investigation for sexual assault. That's 8,985 seconds, if you're counting. Who's counting, right? 149,000 minutes. 2,496 hours. And if you really want to get specific, if that wasn't specific enough, that's about 30% of this year. That's how long it's taken. And now today we finally have news concerning whether or not these three players acted wrongly. Well, the Title IX investigation, according to the alleged victim's attorney, the Title IX investigation has revealed that these football players have violated university policy. Within the article, you may be asking yourself this. Okay, what will Michigan State do as far as the disciplinary process is concerned if this is in fact accurate, right? Well, I thought Chris did a good job of kind of providing a few bullet points as to the timeline based on a few different scenarios here. The article goes on to say that respondents who are found responsible after an investigation first would meet with an MSU administrator to learn about their rights and responsibilities. If they accept responsibility, the respondents can ask an administrator to determine a sanction at that time or ask to meet with a board to determine a sanction. A judgment for punishment would be administered at that point. Now, if they deny responsibility, they can request a hearing with all parties convened at a later date or request a formal hearing before a board. Now, if they are found responsible, sanctions would then be issued. Both the complainant, I should say, and respondents also have right to appeal a decision, reasons included if there was a conflict of interest or if proper procedures were not followed, and initial appeals go to the University Student Appeals Board. Suspension or dismissal sanctions may also be appealed to the Vice President for Student Affairs and Services. So you see, there are a ton of different scenarios that can play out depending on if these three unnamed football players, along with the staff member, accept responsibility or deny responsibility. So we'll just have to play the waiting game and see what happens from here on out. But this is a black eye for Michigan State football and for the university. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. There is now a heavy spotlight on MSU, especially when evaluating just how frequent sexual assault allegations have shaken universities across the nation in recent times. Michigan State has now just been added to the list when evaluating what is taking place with MSU football. I mean, heck, I kind of went back in time and did a bit of research. Not going too far back, but just to the start of last year's college football season. And if you remember, there was a ton of chatter surrounded around college football in relation to the conversation of sexual assault. Because less than a month into the college football year last season, you saw five alleged rapists uncovered in just 2 weeks of regular season college football action. If you don't remember what took place in that first month, you had a situation at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where linebacker Allen Artis was suspended over a rape allegation. And then not long after that, at the University of Minnesota, you had four Gopher football players suspended for allegedly raping a woman. When it comes to how those investigations panned out at UNC concerning Allen Artis, the Title IX office found Allen not responsible. And the ripple effect from that decision was protest on campus. Students began to protest the decision right on the campus. Became big news, but only hit the wire for about a couple of days, and then everything kind of went hush-hush. Now, when it came to the Gopher football players, those three young men who were recommended for suspensions as part of a University of Minnesota sexual assault investigation also had those punishments overturned. But it blew my mind how in just a one-month span, less than a one-month span, the opening month of college football, you had college football players who were said to be involved in some sort of sexual assault investigation. Former USC football players Osa Massina and Don Hill, they won't be charged with the crime after L.A. County District Attorney's Office determined an investigation into an alleged sexual assault in July of last year provided insufficient evidence. That was also a big story concerning college football players and alleged sexual assault. Massina was charged with one count of first-degree rape and two counts of first-degree forcible sodomy in September. In a separate case, involving the same alleged victim in Utah, the trial is set to begin in June 26th, actually in Salt Lake City, according to Messina's attorney. Both Massina and Hill were suspended from the USC football team in September after the allegations surfaced. When it comes to that Title IX investigation conducted by the university, well, it found that Massina should be terminated as a student at USC, and then Massina did not accept responsibility and actually appealed. These aren't new cases. These aren't old hat, I should say. This has been going on for quite some time when it comes to athletes who play the game of college football involved in alleged sexual assault. And it has become a huge problem. And now we are seeing right here in mid-Michigan, right here on the campus of Michigan State University, a situation of the such unfolding right before our eyes. And now Mark D'Antonio, his coaching staff, other representatives of the university are under their spotlight. And how they respond is going to be key in this entire situation. And it doesn't stop there with those few examples I just gave, right? far too many examples, because I recently saw a story actually last week concerning the school that has dominated headlines when having this conversation, that concerning Baylor. How about the latest developments concerning Baylor? An NPR report from last week, a new federal lawsuit against Baylor University accuses football players of drugging and gang raping young women as part of a hazing or bonding ritual, and the university for failing to investigate the pervasive sexual assault. The players allegedly often took photographs and videos as they carried out the gang rapes. This is according to an article from NPR last week, Wednesday. That's what the suit alleges. It was filed by Jane Doe, who says she was raped by 4 to 8 Baylor players in February of 2012. Her Title IX suit says the school's, quote, deliberately indifferent response, end quote, effectively denied her educational opportunities. The suit also describes dogfighting at football parties and burglaries carried out by football players without consequence. Stunning stuff, right? Absolutely stunning. And what's even more stunning for me is the NCAA's silence. The NCAA's silence in relation to these allegations, these sexual assault allegations, time after time after time, when it comes to universities across the board here in America. The NCAA has decided to stay silent. The NCAA will not get involved unless it gets really, 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 really bad. It's already really bad, but it has to hit a certain level. A certain, let's say, Jerry Sandusky-esque newswire type level in order for the NCAA to come out. Because this is the NCAA. This is one of the richest organizations in America, folks. The NCAA actually took in over $1 billion in 2015. All of that profit and no big dollar initiative to battle sexual assault, or no offering of plans on how to stop it, on how to eradicate it, on how to educate our young men on how to treat a woman. That's what's been the big frustrating part in all of this for me. Silence has become complicit in this conversation for the NCAA. Again, when does the NCAA get involved? Only when the problem gets really bad. The only time the NCAA involved itself in sanctioning an athletic program for sexual assault related charges was when the rampant child sexual abuse under the hands of Jerry Sandusky came to light at Penn State. At that time, NCAA President Mark Emmert announced 5 years of probation, along with a 4-year postseason ban, a loss of 40 athletic scholarships, and a vacating of all 112 wins and titles from 1998 to 2012. Yet, despite telling Penn State's board that sanctions were not able to be appealed, the NCAA quietly, what did they do? They rolled back the majority of them over the next 2 years. Scholarships eventually returned to their normal 85 per year by 2013. Just a year later, the NCAA rescinded the school's postseason bans and reinstated former coaches Joe Paterno, and Tom Bradley's winning records. Now, it's not surprised when that came through and that happened. So right now, this is a huge conversation with a ton of chapters to it. Who's responsible? That's one of the big questions that you can ask when having this conversation when it comes to Michigan State University. And again, We are all waiting now to see how Michigan State handles this. Also, we are awaiting to see what happens with the other two separate investigations concerning this story, how they unfold and what those investigations find. The criminal case has been under review by Ingham County Prosecutor Carol Seaman since March 14th. It's been a long time as well, right? We still have no updates when it comes to the criminal case. And again, we've addressed this before. I know a lot of you out there, a lot of Michigan State fans out there are wanting to know who these young men are. And there have been a lot of MSU fans that just don't get it and have attacked the media for not coming out with the names, if we do, in fact, know them in the first place, because you just don't understand the legal process. We can't come out with the names. The media cannot come out with the names and cannot speculate if these young men have not officially been charged in the court of law. And there currently is no timetable and has been no timetable for when or if charges will be filed against these young men. MSU police are seeking for warrants. We do know that. And the third investigation is an external probe into the football program, which is being conducted by attorneys with Jones Day Law Firm. What is your reaction to all of this? This is certainly not a great day for MSU sports. Again, according to the Freep, a Title IX investigation determined that three Michigan State football players who were accused of sexually assaulting a fellow student were found to have violated university policy. In what way, we don't know. We don't know the details. That is all we know right now, and this is all according to an attorney who represents the alleged victim, that being Karen Truzowski, who confirmed to the Free Press that the case against the three unnamed football players is processing through MSU's student conduct system. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We're not done with this conversation just yet. Again, I want to hear your thoughts on it. You can also weigh in via Facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we do have other topics to tackle, believe it or not. You'll get brief thoughts on the NHL and NBA playoffs. Also, we have coverage from last night's softball classic championship game at Rainey Park. That and more. Don't go anywhere. To WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 94.5 FM. We have been responding in segment A before we hit that first break to breaking news concerning the Michigan State football sexual assault investigation. Three separate investigations taking place. A Title IX investigation, one of the three, has determined that those three football players have been found to have violated university policy. Now, I'm seeing a few comments here via our Facebook page, and one of our dear listeners, Remy, wants to know, is the violation in connection, does it find that these players are guilty, basically, right? So does that mean they are guilty? That's what I'm seeing is one of the questions from Remy. We don't know. We just know that some wrongdoing was done here. In my view, when you come out and say that they have violated university policy, we know they did something wrong. As to what specifics, as to what was done wrong, we don't know, and I won't speculate. I can only go off of what we are seeing reported, what has been reported, what we know. I cannot give you specifics as to what happened, what has been found, and I'm sure those details will come out soon. I don't know about today, maybe later on this week. I don't know. But again, three separate investigations taking place. The Title IX investigation has determined that three MSU football players have found to have violated university policy. Don't know anything other than that. What is your immediate reaction to that? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I've gone on the record to say this a lot as well, because Mark D'Antonio has been nothing but a classy coach who historically throughout his time here at Michigan State University has recruited athletes who have been upstanding, athletes who have stayed away, for the most part, off the field drama. And Mark D'Antonio has been a hallmark staple, doing a great job of representing the front porch of Michigan State University. And I can only imagine what is going through his head as this investigation unfolds. Because we all know what happens in situations like this. People love to paint a broad brush, even though we're just talking about three football players here, three of an entire college football roster, 60, 70 plus players here we're talking about. One rotten apple spoils the bunch. That's how people look at this. So when dealing with a situation like this and in dealing with news like this, it makes your program look like there is no control. And to reveal the context of the conversation here, this is sexual assault we are talking about. This is a topic that does not get treated lightly and should not get treated lightly, especially here in 2017. This is bad. It really is. And again, this is only the beginning of this whole thing. We're finally, and I must say, I'm really surprised. Again, it's been, folks, 104 days since February 9th, and we're finally seeing something come out when it comes to these investigations. Some news come out when it comes to these investigations. And we still don't know what the findings are from the other two separate investigations. So 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to try to lighten the mood here on today's current sports. Last night, I had the privilege of covering one of my favorite tournaments in the high school realm here locally here in mid-Michigan, that being the Softball Classic, where Bob Every, who is the chairman of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame, he's also got great ties when it comes to softball here in the area. One time a softball coach at Lansing Community College, dear friend of ours here on Current Sports. He does a great job of organizing this event and picking teams that he deems worthy to participate in competing for who is exactly the best softball team in the area. Well, I was there last night along with our summer intern, Karina Garcia, covering the Softball Classic in Eaton Rapids, the Eaton Rapids Greyhound softball team topping the previously unbeaten Grand Ledge. Came into this matchup unbeaten. They were something like 25 and a donut. 25-0, and a 4-0 shutout. They didn't even get a run. The Comets did not even record a run last night against a consistent powerhouse in the sport of softball here at the high school realm, that being Eaton Rapids. And one Greyhound in particular that I want to highlight right now is Greyhound freshie Grace Lato, who threw a no-hitter in the semifinal against Weberville to get Eaton Rapids to that big stage yesterday. And she goes on the mound yet again. And I want to remind you all that we were all set to cover the Softball Classic Championship game on Friday night at Rainey Park, but the rain, pun intended, would not let up on Friday night, and the matchup had to be pushed to Monday, yesterday. So Grace had some time to get some rest up that arm and go back out on the mound to try and deliver the Greyhounds a win, in which she did in fantastic fashion. She threw a two-hit shutout to seal the win. And now when it comes to Eaton Rapids, this is the sixth Softball Classic Championship for ER in 9 years. How about that? Very cool stuff. And actually first since 2014. I got the chance after the Softball Classic to chat with Grace, and she was, of course, ecstatic. She was actually named Softball Classic Tournament Pitcher of the tourney, which is very cool stuff. I got a chance to chat with Grace. She was so ecstatic about winning, about getting that honor as well. And also head coach Scott Warner about Grace's performance and what this means for the Greyhounds as the season trucks along and they try to compete in districts, regionals, so on and so forth. And here is what they had to say.
I blocked everything out, and it was just me and my catcher, Sydney, and we just played our game like we do in practice. I don't know. I just am pushing really hard for this, and my teammates backed me up, and I did it for my teammates.
How much does this mean for this team? Six.
Oh, it means a lot.
Right. How much have you guys been talking about this all week?
Oh, everything we talk about is this. This is it.
On Friday, I know you guys got rained out.
Yeah.
That was a bit. I mean, you guys had to be chomping at the bit, waiting for the weekend to come and now playing Monday. I mean, what's this wait been like?
Oh, I was in the zone on Friday. I was definitely ready. But today, I didn't feel it as much as I did Friday. But I think eventually I did get in the groove. So that worked out.
This is good timing with the big tournament coming up shortly. Does it feel like you guys are kind of playing at the top of your potential right now?
I think we are, but I think we can also push it more. I think we have a lot of potential on this team, and we're going for it all.
Yeah, coming away with this trophy, though, that's got to be a
oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is.
Giving Grand Liz their first loss of the year, that has to be pretty sweet, right?
Yeah, it is.
Was there any dialogue about that as well coming into this?
Yeah, our team kind of is like, we just are excited to play Grand Ledge every year. They're a good team, so we were excited. Yeah, I did not expect to come into this season to pitch this hard. I thought I was going to be not pitching as much and pitching like maybe every third game, but I've pushed myself, and now I'm pushing really hard.
How did you end up in that? I mean, you said you weren't expecting to pitch that much. What was the key that you kind of maybe getting a regular spot in the pitching rotation there?
Well, my coach Rob Dunham, he's pushed me really hard to this point. We've done mental training, we've done physical training, and we've made it. So
the mental training, what kind of mental training?
Well, we do a program. So it's a program through our phones, and we talk about it online of like how to be a tough player.
Are you surprised at your success this early? You're only a freshman, Grace. Are you surprised about that success?
Yeah.
So you surprised yourself.
Yeah.
It feels good. I mean, all the championships have been really exciting and really special, but brand new group of girls, only one of these girls, our senior Ellie Wythe, has played on a championship team before. So for the other 14, it's a brand new experience.
Well, you got a freshman who certainly is ready, Grace Lato. She had two great performances throughout this tournament. Talk about her. Are you surprised that she's this good this early, I should ask?
Well, it's been building throughout the year. So, you know, she's gotten better as the season has gone on. And eventually it kind of became one of those situations where we were better defensively if we put her in on the mound and we took our regular starting pitcher and put her at shortstop and then moved our shortstop to the outfield. So we can put a good defense behind Grace, and that makes all the difference in the world.
have one of your seniors deliver a big knock early.
Haley Overholtz, yes.
To have that, I mean, how nice was that to see?
That was great. It was a great at-bat for her because we had a girl in scoring position, and she just had a great approach, was very, very patient, and just took a pitch and didn't swing hard, just stroked a nice line drive dead center field, and feels real great. She's another one of those girls that's been a third-year varsity senior for us and was with us a few years back when we weren't quite the team, but we were developing, and she's been one of those, along with our other veterans, that have developed along the way, and then we added some nice freshman talent to the nucleus, and it's turned out to be a pretty good mix.
How much momentum does this kind of give you guys, as you guys are going into postseason here in a week and a half?
Well, hopefully it gives us momentum, but, you know, we still got to keep working, and we've got a few more doubleheaders ahead of us, and then we got a tough district that we're going to be at over at Jackson Northwest. So, you know, momentum's a funny thing. We're going to try to keep building on it in practice and in the upcoming of games that we still have. But it sure gives you momentum, feeling like you can be in a tough battle against a good team and you can come out on top.
But it's kind of got to feel like that, you know, with the being a team like Grand Ledge as well, too. I mean, things are coming together nicely for your team here, and things have been building up nicely.
Yes. Well, they're an outstanding hitting team, and we knew the big challenge was holding them down. And I told my wife we're going to need at least 4 runs to win today because I figured it would be tough to shut them out. They're such a good hitting team. But we played great defense, and Grace pitched very well. And we're able to get the shutout and score the 4 runs that I figured we needed.
Yeah, I was about to say, you got exactly that,
yeah,
right?
Right, right.
Does it mean anything at all to give Grand Ledge their first loss this season?
Not really. I mean, we weren't worried about that. We were just worried about playing a good team and playing for a championship, because there's a lot of good teams out there that have losses. So we've got 4 losses ourselves. And so that the record isn't really that important. It's about the quality of the opponent, and Grand Ledge is a high-quality opponent.
Yes, they certainly are. Again, Grand Ledge, a team that entered the softball classic championship game at Rainey Park last night, previously undefeated. Eden Rapids handing the Comets their first loss of the year. And as you just heard head coach Scott Warner say, they only have 4 losses all year for ER. Those losses came at the hands of Mount Pleasant back on April 15th. And then they fell to St. Joseph on May 6th, Beaverton on May 13th, and then Dexter on May 18th. Those are the only losses. And I also want to note that 2 of those losses I see actually came in, well, I should say their last loss to Dexter came in extra innings. So I tell you what, this is a fun team to watch, and Grace Lato has a tremendous upside. She's only a freshman, and to go out and do what she did in the course of 2 games, one unbelievable no-hit bid in the semifinals to beat Weberville, and then to go out there on the big stage in the softball class championship game and throw a no-hitter, wow, she is fun to watch. And also want to piggyback off a comment that Scott had to that he made after that game. Scott Warner talking about the defense that also played a big part in that win. The defense behind Grace Lato, we saw some great plays by infielders and outfielders throughout that game yesterday and throughout the tournament for Eden Rapids. I want to give a big shout out to probably the one that impressed me the most, Peyton Benjamin. She's also a freshman and a very good infielder and outfielder. She plays both. She's dual. Unbelievable stuff. So congratulations to the Eden Rapids Greyhounds. Again, if you want to catch visual coverage from that game last night, you can simply go and watch the Current Sports 2-Minute Drill via Facebook.com/Current Sports right now. Let's hit our final break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's Current Sports by briefly chatting about the NBA playoffs. And also, a publication is making the statement that the Detroit Lions will not make the playoffs next year. We'll tell you why. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We just finished up bringing to you our coverage from last night's softball classic championship game between Eden Rapids and Grand Ledge. Again, congratulations to the Eden Rapids Greyhounds for the softball classic championship win. The Diamond Classic. Hey, that's where we turn our attention now to. And I love the Diamond Classic as well. Both tourneys are so fun to watch. The best softball and baseball you can catch all in one venue, all in one area, all in one tournament. The Dean Shippey Capital Area Diamond Classic at Kircher Municipal Park took place yesterday. St. John's beating Fowler. Okemos top Portland St. Pat's. So Okemos and St. John's both move on. And today, actually, the venue is changing. Cooley Law School Stadium. You can catch Portland versus Grand Ledge at 5, and then Fowlerville versus Lakewood at 7 p.m. I want to briefly acknowledge the NBA playoffs and also the NHL playoffs last night as you had the Nashville Predators. How about that news, right? Nashville moving on to the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time in franchise history. Pretty impressive stuff, I must say. In game six, it was a 6-3 win over the Anaheim Ducks, and now the Predators are just waiting on the winner of the Ottawa Senators and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Game six in the Eastern Conference Finals takes place tonight. The Penguins actually have a 3-2 series lead there. And in the NBA playoffs, you had the Golden State Warriors booking a ticket to yet another trip to the NBA Finals. A 129-115 dub in game four of the Western Conference Finals, making history, a perfect 12-0 in the postseason. Now you got to give them their props. Again, this is a historic accomplishment as they become the first NBA team to do so. But I also think it gives you a brief look and a peek into how the NBA has changed. The NBA has become so top-heavy now. I thought it was top-heavy in the past. It's become really, really top-heavy now with super teams linking up. And Kevin Durant, you know, we saw Kevin Durant, of course, very happy, as he should be. And we all knew this was coming, right? But Kevin Durant, a very happy Kevin Durant, hugging his mother. He was all smiles during the Western Conference Finals championship trophy ceremony with Doris Burke on ESPN during ESPN Sports Center with SVP Scott Van Pelt. And, you know, I just couldn't help but think about the road that Golden State has had to get to this point this year in particular. And I can't help but think, what if, you know, what if Kawhi Leonard was healthy in this series, right? I mean, because if you look at game one, Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs were up by 23 points before Kawhi went down in the third quarter of game one. And then they were outscored by 87 points in the 3.5 games that followed. Of course, the Spurs were not going to cruise to a 20-point win each and every time out. But I do believe that if Kawhi Leonard was healthy, this series would have been far more competitive with him out there. He's a top five player in the league on the floor. And you see how efficient that Spurs machine runs when Kawhi is out there playing. It was a bit bittersweet watching that game last night because I think all signs point to Manu Ginobili bidding us all adieu as he received a standing ovation late in the fourth quarter of that game four. You know, a great way to go out, and you saw all the tributes immediately. I thought it was pretty fitting, seeing as though Greg Popovich surprised Manu and gave him the start for last night's game, something that Ginobili didn't even see coming. And I do believe that Ginobili, especially when you look at his career, I mean, my goodness, actually in the 2014 finals, he averaged double digits for an entire playoff series. That was his last really big hoorah, right? But he's been such a consistent player throughout his career, one of the best to ever do it. And there are so many Manu Ginobili memories, which I'll share later on. I reserve, many of them probably for Friday's Reflection Friday segment. But, Jacob Herbert is filling in for Isaac Constance, our engineer right now, who's down in New Orleans. And Jacob
brought up a really cool moment that none of us will forget in Manu's career. And it was a pretty funny one. Actually, on Halloween night during a Spurs and Sacramento Kings game. What'd you say, Jacob? I'm sorry.
Sorry, I was going to get that clip for you because it was it's the you know, him swatting the bat.
Yeah, he swats the bat. Do you have that clip for us?
No, I got something different. No. I it wasn't that exciting. The call itself with Manu with the bat.
I played that whole thing up, man. I know. I'm disappointed.
No, in fairness, I came in here before the show and I told you I couldn't get that clip.
Yeah, I just forgot. This has been a crazy, crazy show. But yeah, that's probably my favorite moment. Okay, what clip do you have? You want to play it real quick? We got 30 seconds.
The Heat have gone cold. Ginobili on the finish. Flushes it with the left hand.
Okay, just a generic Manu Ginobili dunk. Is that from last night's game?
No. That's from, I believe, the 2014 NBA Finals. He dunked over Chris Bosh.
Oh, yeah. So, I remember that one. And again, that was the finals in which Manu averaged double digits throughout the entire playoff series. We're going to miss Manu, for sure. Now, I have more dialogue on Manu Ginobili later on this week. But Manu Ginobili is one of my favorite players of all time, and he really was one of the pioneers in the NBA, really becoming the international brand that it is. All right, that wraps up today's Current Sports. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow, folks. As always, take care, have a great afternoon, and be easy, people.